Welcome to the Story Story Night podcast, where you hear true stories on a theme, recorded live on stage and without notes. I'm your host, Jessica Holmes. On December 27th, we held Going Home, Stories of Returning, to a packed audience of over 300. With every age group in attendance, and stories from all sorts, the night felt like a quirky, wild, and welcoming reunion. Today, we present two stories from that event. First, featured storyteller Angela Baker goes to the eclectic home of her eccentric 95-year-old grandmother.
It's great to see all of your wonderful smiling faces tonight. So this story takes place over the Veterans Holiday, and I hope you enjoy it. Thank you. I had a lot of red wine to get through this tonight. Ah, the holidays. Glorious time to celebrate the birth of our Lord by overeating, overindulging, and getting to spend time with those relatives that you've been avoiding all year. Now, for some, the holidays are about the gifts and the presents. Now, for me, it just happens to be spending time with my weird, kooky, and nutty family. Now, not too long ago, my grandma called me on the phone, and my first thought was, oh my God, something must be wrong, because my grandma never calls me. Now, me and her have a little bit of a history, going back to my childhood. She is quite an intimidating person. She's not the type to bake cookies, and if she was going to give us cookies, it was usually the store-bought kind with some chunky frozen milk. I remember her taking us shopping when I was younger. She'd go up to the cute salesman and she'd say, oh, excuse me, sir. Could you tell me where the bras are for the girls with the little boobies? And I made the mistake of telling her one day that I was not going to church with her. And she'd say in her sweet voice, I'm not mad at you, Angie. I'm just disappointed. Oh, and you're going to hell. So I'm talking with my grandma on the phone, and it hit me that she sounded really, really old and frail, and it just got me right here. And it was just really strange to be talking to her just to talk to her, because the only time she ever calls me is to tell me, Angie, you didn't send me that thank you note for Christmas, and here it is March. So I get off the phone, and perhaps I make a very fateful decision that I'm going to go visit my grandma ill. And on another note, she also happens to live in my old childhood town, which also dredges up a lot of awful memories of adolescence. So I hop on a red eye, and I go and visit my grandma. Now my grandma, she's 95 years old, she is a strict Catholic, and one hell of a drunk. Her liquor of choice, of course, is Two Buck Chuck. And she told me not too long ago, matter-of-factly, that she wants to be buried in her little princess crown. And she prefers to be known as the Polish princess. She's just so friggin' cute. So I drive her, fly into San Francisco, and take an airporter down to Napa Wine Country, California, where my grandma lives. And she picks me up in her little white Honda, and we promptly get lost in the parking lot. So we're driving around in circles for a good 20 minutes. You can't talk to my grandma. And she finally figures her own way out of the parking lot. And we drive about 100 yards to her house. So we go inside. And she shows me where I'm going to be staying. On the door is a little plaque that festoons it that says the Pope John Paul II room. Now, as I walk in, I'm greeted by literally hundreds of little Jesus figurines, their beady little eyes staring at me, and a giant poster of the Pope right above the bed. Now, needless to say, it was a little uncomfortable getting undressed in that room. So I go out to see what my grandma has for dinner. And my grandma loves to feed me old food. Now, I'm sure that all of you out there have a parent or a grandparent with stomachs of steel. My grandma loves to say, "Oh, but those poor starving children in Africa." Or, "Green fuzz is good for you, Angie." So I was dreading what she might have for me for dinner. She pulls out this casserole and my stomach just kind of drops a little. And she said, "Oh, my neighbor made it for me." And I was like, "Oh, bring it on." I was so hungry. So we're sitting at the table eating, and I'm thinking we're having a really good conversation going on here. Until she says, "Angie, can you tell me when you're done talking so I can turn my hearing aid back on?" "Thanks, Grandma. I love you, too." So the next morning, you know, I'm a little off my game and pouring myself a bowl of Raisin Bran flakes that are probably from 1984. And she says, "Angie, would you like some creamer on that?" And I said, "Well, okay, I've never had creamer on my cereal." So she gives me the creamer and I'm pouring it on and it's going chunk, chunk, chunk. And I look and it just happens to be a couple months old. And she's looking at me with these big eyes as I'm eating every single bite of this cereal. She's just got this smile on her face. And I'm thinking, "Oh my God, am I going to survive the week?" Literally. So the next day, Veterans Day, we go to my grandma's favorite place in the whole world, the Veterans something or other. Anyways, it's where her boyfriend Chuck lives. Now he's 90 years old, he's on dialysis, he's in a little wheelchair, and he's cantankerous as hell. So I got to spend the whole day with these guys, and we went to a jazz concert. And I'll tell you, the guy in front of us, he had a really good idea because he sat there the whole time with his hands covering his ears. And it wasn't because the jazz concert was god-awful. No, it was because my grandma and her boyfriend fought the whole friggin' time. She said, "You're pushy, Rich." And he'd say, "You're a bitch." And he would just hunch down in his chair and he'd say, "I'm not pushy." And then she leans over to me and I swear to God, she whispers in my ear, "I think that Rich is a homosexual." And I was like, "Grandma, girls don't say those types of things." And that was when I realized that I had been introduced to a whole elderly subculture that I never knew existed and I never, ever wanted to think about. And I still kind of get the heebie-jeebies when Grandma brings up the necking with her boyfriend part. So the next day, I got to get together with an old childhood friend that I had not seen in more than 15 years. Now, I'm sure a lot of you out here would like to think that you have changed from the gawky 13-year-old adolescence that we all were. And I was hoping that I changed as well. I didn't have the big round glasses anymore. Still have the braces. But we had a really good time going over some old childhood memories, and then at the end, she says, "Angie, you're still that funny girl that I remember," and I just sat there with this big smile on my face, thinking, is that a good thing or a bad thing? And after we parted ways later that day, I got to thinking, you know what, so what if I am that gawky adolescent inside, because I'm pretty cool with who I am now, and that's all right. So by the fourth day, my grandma had pretty much wore me down. And I was ready to wrap it up and go home, and I heard her on the phone talking to a friend. She said, "That Angie, she's such a lovely young lady." And it just stopped me in my tracks because I had never heard my grandma say those words before. It was always, "Angie, why can't you do something with your hair? Angie, why can't you be a lady? Why can't you be more like your little Catholic cousin who's now knocked up and divorced?" That's beside the point. So it felt really good to hear her say those words, although I'm never going to actually confront her about that. And the last day, I'm on the bus and saying goodbye to her from the window and looking out at her, and she's just, "Mwah, Angie, Angie," and there's nobody else out there, so everybody on the bus is just staring at me like, who is that crazy lady outside? And, you know, I was getting a little misty-eyed at saying goodbye to Grandma L. And then it hit me like a Mack truck. That, oh my God, I was just like my grandma. The person that had intimidated me my entire life. And I was just like her. So, overall, going home, I learned that I am most like the person in my life that I grew up hating, which is an odd concept. And also, I realized that home for me is not so much a physical place, but more like where my family is. So if I'm visiting my grandma down in Napa, that's where my home is. Or up here, where all my family just happened to migrate. And no matter how crazy or nutty or kooky they can be, I have to learn to embrace them, especially during the holidays. Not always an easy thing to do. So the moral of my story is that, you know, sometimes it's good to embrace your family, and you never know if they're going to be here next year or not. So just suck it up, put a smile on your face, and love them. Thank you all for coming tonight.
Do you know someone just sitting on great stories? Implore, plead, beg them to submit to become a featured storyteller for Story Story Night. We're now somewhat desperately looking for submissions for our January show, Hooked, Stories of Cravings and Compulsions, Bad Habits, Good Times, Unbelievable Stories. To enter, simply email the beginning, middle, and end of your story on the theme to storystorynight@live.com. Find all the submission details at storystorynight.org under the Featured Storytellers tab. Of course, if you're feeling compulsive, you can enter in our Story Slam right at the event. Now, we hear from our Story Slam winner from Going Home, Lizzie Duffy, who returns to the scene of a foreign exchange.
Yeah. Oh, there are a lot of people out there. Hi. I'm really nervous. I'm not a big public speaker, but I'd really like to share the story with you about when I was 17 and stupid, and I decided to go to Italy on exchange for 6 months and didn't know any Italian. Except ciao. I knew ciao. So I was very friendly. Ciao. Ciao. So I went to go live in La Maddalena with a host family of four, two host sisters who were a year younger and a year older than me, so right close to my age. Both knew English. My host mom was an English teacher, so she was also fluent in English. My host dad didn't actually want an Italian or an American exchange student and didn't speak any English. So everything was fine. Like, I was really scared because I didn't know any Italian, but my host sisters were always there if I was like, what's this? And they'd tell me, and so I could get around. And I lived on an island too, so everyone knew that I was the American exchange student. I was the first American exchange student to ever come to La Maddalena, Italy. So I was kind of like, I stuck out a lot. Anyway, so everything was fine. And then my host sisters had volleyball practice, and my host mom had to go to a meeting. So I was at home with my host dad, who didn't speak English and who didn't like me. And I did not want to eat dinner with him. I wanted to just stay in my room and think English thoughts and not talk to him. But he said, "Cena pronta, dinner is ready." So I, you know, come out really scared. And he's like, you know, apparecchiare la tavola. So I set the table and I'm sitting there. Like, I knew little commands, so I wasn't completely lost. And he sits down and he just looks at me like, I don't know what I'm going to do with you. And he's like, televisione, okay. And just switches on the TV. He doesn't wait for me to say okay. And I'm listening and I can hear like president and America and I don't know, school. Like, I'm not understanding anything. And I'm just getting confused. I'm getting frustrated. Like, I've been there a month. I want to understand. I don't understand. And I'm like that in my dinner plate. I hate it. I'm so mad. Like, why did I go to Italy? I studied French. Like, why am I here? And he looks at me and he's just like, I capito. Do you understand? And I'm like, nope. Not an ounce. So he switches off the TV and he just like looks at me for a while. He's just, I don't know what I'm going to do with you. And I don't know what I'm going to do with him, because my Italian CDs have taught me to ask, you know, are you Italian and how old are you and where do you live? You know, like, I obviously know all these things. So But he looks at me and he's like, well, where are you from? I was like, oh, I'm from Idaho. And he's like, how many sisters do you have? So he starts asking me these really simple questions that I know and that I understand. And he knows all this stuff. It was all on my, like, application, you know, before I came. But he's asking me because he really wants me to learn. Like, even though he wasn't thrilled about having another person living in their tiny house, and he wasn't sure what he was going to do with a girl who didn't speak Italian, he wanted me to learn. So he's trying, and he's trying to help me, and slowly we're starting to talk, and pretty soon, like, I realize I know a lot more Italian than I thought I did, and he realizes he knows a little more English than he thought he did. So we're starting to talk, and it's kind of a conversation, probably not for someone who knows both languages, but it's fine. And so it's still getting to be a frustrating evening. I'm using my hands a lot. He's, of course, using his hands all the time. And but then, you know, the charades, it gets annoying, because it's like, I don't know this word, and I'm looking at the ceiling. I'm like, oh, God, this is so frustrating. I just want to talk to you. You realize, like, your limitation to, like, getting to connect to people, but you can't just talk to them. So, you know, we finished dinner. I'm frustrated. He's frustrated. And he's just like, whatever. He starts picking up the plates, not even saying, like, don't worry, I'll, you know, clean up. Like, he's just done talking to me. And I was like, oh, wait, un attimo. And I run back to my room real quick, and I come out, and I'm really proud now. And I have a huge green dictionary. I throw it on the table. And by now, he just, like, looks at the dictionary, looks at me. We're both exhausted from trying to talk to each other, and he just laughs at me. Like, he just cracks up, like, why did you think of this before we sat down to dinner? And I laugh, too. Like, I'm embarrassed, and I'm just like, oh, you know, I'm sorry. I didn't think of it before. And then, you know, slowly, we start talking more, and I look to him more because, you know, my host mom knows the translation for everything, but he doesn't. And so it makes a lot better for me to use my words instead of just, like, translating all the time. And I talk to my host dad, and we end up getting along really well. And one of my last nights in Italy, I'm sitting outside. They have this beautiful little garden that looks over the ocean. And I'm sitting there. I'm thinking about how far I've come, you know. Came speaking French. Now I speak Italian. And it's really beautiful out there. And he says, are you, like, what are you doing? I was like, well, I'm just thinking. Of course, all in Italian. And he looks up at the sky, you know, like me, and he says, well, I want you to know that this is your second home, and you can always come home. And that really touched me. And so this summer, I went back. And, you know, that first moment with him when I first met him, I didn't know that he didn't like me when I first met him, but we'd both gone to, like, kiss each other at the same time, so we almost, like, touched lips. It was really awkward. But this time, I got off the plane, I come out, I kissed the right cheek, and he gave me the biggest hug, and he said, welcome home. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Story Night is brought to you by presenting partners the Boise State Story Initiative and The Cabin, venue partner The Lennon Building, design partner Neighborhood All-Stars, and our broadcast partner Boise State Public Radio. Please donate now at radio.boisestate.edu. Our Story Night theme is by Dan Costello. Hear more at hearcostello.com. Please join us next week for more stories from going home. Learn more at storystorynight.org.